Hello and welcome once again to Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our team here at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me, my colleagues, Joe McGraelich, Sandra Hurley and Micheál Lehane. And we're going to start with Thursday's launch of the long-awaited housing plan. The government's promise is still 300,000 homes delivered between now and 2030, although annual targets are scrapped. There's to be emergency powers legislation to speed up the delivery of critical infrastructure to service more homes. There'll be new CPO powers. There'll be action on derelict sites. There'll be more social housing, more affordable housing, more money for the Land Development Agency, action on Gaeltacht housing, on long-term homeless and getting them into accommodation, a cut in VAT on apartments going forward as well as from the current budget, and a raft more measures. The opposition response, after a decade of failure, this is the fourth iteration of the housing plan. They say it's more of the same, it failed before, it'll fail again, and they don't believe there is any chance really of this government's plan delivering 300,000 new homes by 2030.
That's it, let's go home.
Would that be a fair summation?
That's it, yeah. I suppose a few things that you could say are new, even though most of it doesn't look new. There's 140,000 to try and convert old derelict shops in towns into homes. And as well as that, there'll be a bit of money to get an expert architect in to tell you how to do that. As well as that, there's a kind of a dispute over this 100 million that's there to get people out of emergency homelessness, to get families out. That was there in different forms before. This seems more tailored. James Brown, when he talked...
And it's probably a replacement, isn't it, for the tenant in situ scheme, because there was a moral hazard there with that as well.
It's all part of the local authority housing, second-hand homes acquisition, really, in one way or another, just maybe slightly rebranded with a bit more money there. But it is something the government are clinging into. Now, in the past, the circulars that went out to local authorities on that spoke about prioritising larger families. James Brown, keen not to do that this morning at the launch, saying families of all sizes are going to be catered for in relation to this. So they're the type of things that government are looking to. And I suppose the big bit then seems to be around the 50 billion or so that is there for different parts of infrastructure, whether it's energy, whether it's water, whether it's transport, backing that with emergency legislation that could go to party leaders in the next week or two to make sure that it will happen. Yeah.
And I mean, Aintha were pointing out, weren't they, at leaders, Joe, that this is a record-breaking government for all the wrong reasons, on rising numbers in homelessness, rising rents, rising house prices. So the question, I suppose, about this plan and the key question for the government here, and one I think probably a lot of their own backbenchers are asking as well, we have had plans before.
Yes.
Does this one crack the nut of delivery? Even if it's not going to deliver this year, can it deliver?
Well, just going back to your intro there, and you gave a very fine detailed intro of everything that's in the plan and then the opposition reaction, which has been fairly universal. But the reaction of backbenchers in the government is also very interesting as well. I was chatting with one backbencher a while ago who said to me that if we do not deliver this, we are going to pay a heavy price. He said that, you know, in the last general election, an awful lot of people on the doors, they raised the issue of housing, they put their confidence in the government one last time.
They said 40,000 homes in 2025.
There was a sense of, we'll give you the benefit of the doubt this time. It seems that things were improving, but now, after, you know, everything we've seen in the recent weeks with the election and all the rest of it, there's a real sense in backbenchers in the government that this is the last chance and this really has to work.
Okay.
And if it doesn't work, they will pay a heavy price.
Yeah. And whatever we saw revealed today, the message very much coming from the Tánaiste leaders, Sandra, was a lot of this is going to hinge on emergency legislation that is going to be brought before the Dáil. And he seemed to be laying down the gauntlet to the opposition who were coming at this plan, saying it's not enough. He was saying there is going to be legislation on critical infrastructure and the delivery of that.
Yes, and I think the opposition won't oppose all the individual measures. They can't. But I suppose their key point is that they don't believe that this is delivering the radical reset that was called for in the Housing Commission. Also, there seems to be a real political fault line in this plan announced today, and that is the absence of the annual targets. And you cannot escape the conclusion that this has been done very deliberately so that the government cannot be accountable every year and face the accusations constantly that they are not going to meet those targets. Because we know the numbers, and there was more news yesterday about a new low in commencements, that the numbers are not going well at the moment, and it does not look like they are going to deliver. I think the key point that the government would say is that they believe that 20 billion needs to go into housing every year over the next few years. The government cannot put in all of that money. They need the private sector to pony up. And it does seem like some of the house builders, some of the big ones like Glenveagh and Cairns, are on board with some of the measures announced over the last few months. Glenveagh in particular said that the viability issue is now being addressed, so they feel they will be able to deliver more at scale.
Except, and there's a lot of talk at the launch today about starter homes, but I'm going to give a plug to another podcast here, and it was Professor Orla Hegarty was talking about the whole housing situation on the Irish Times.
Inside Politics podcast. Well.
You see, it's like Miracle on 34th Street.
How good is it?
Quite good, yeah. But anyhow, she was saying, and it's a figure that really stood out, 110 apartments were for sale in Dublin City last year, and 9 were for sale in Cork. The government is, and the private sector is, you know, putting a huge focus on the building of apartments by the private sector. But these are primarily built to rent. Yeah. So they may deliver the numbers, but who can afford to live in them is the other question.
Yes, and that was the viability question, wasn't it? That people building apartments were saying that they couldn't sell it at a price that people could afford to buy. So government is trying to bridge that gap and trying to help the developers and the builders to get the apartments over the line while also maintaining or bringing down the prices. Obviously, the opposition saying that it's not good enough. But I think for the public today, a new plan is somewhat meaningless. It is all about when you go online, when you go on daft.ie and there's very minimal places to rent, there's minimal places to buy.
And they cost and even more than they did before.
Exactly, and the homeless numbers are going in the wrong direction. On the politics of this, there was simply an imperative for the government to bring forward a new plan because the old plan was not working. They had to unveil something. They had to have that plan to wave around in the Dáil today, as Simon Harris did. They had their launch with, they love wearing the hard hats and the high vis. Those pictures they hope will help make it look like they are doing something, but the crunch is in what people feel when they're out there trying to get a place to live. And at the moment, that's not looking like it's going to pick up at speed.
Yeah, there's nothing really revolutionary in this plan anyway. I mean, everything that's in it is the common sense approach that has been spoken about for years.
Well, the question is whether it delivers on the ground.
That's it. I mean, delivery is what it's all about. The question is, will it finally deliver? I mean, we all know that there's been stops with planning permissions. We all know that there's judicial review problems. We all know that building costs in various places have gone up, et cetera, et cetera. There's nothing new in any of that. There's no mystery here. So they put it all together now. It's all been tarted up into a nice plan. The question is delivery, delivery, delivery.
So there are a few things like that. €1 billion to get sites rolling on the edges of towns and all that. That could make a difference. And you'll have local authorities who will develop sites, service sites, where you'll have social, affordable, but also self-built homes. And as well as that, there seems to be this determination within government now that you'll put the local authorities in competition with each other with league tables. Not sure how successful or
be
not.
Interesting to see how that works. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some within government to say, would that really bother a local authority if they were down the league table? There would be financial incentives for those who would be doing better. But of course, it wouldn't be bonuses for executives or anything. And that's real motivation, isn't it?
And potential competition as well, though, between local authorities and private individuals trying to buy houses too, because this €100 million that's been made available now to try and deal with children specifically and families that are in homelessness, €100 million there, and that will be to go out and buy houses on the private market. So a bit like the schemes we've seen to date, but it seems like that potentially could push up the value of houses, the price of houses.
And so you could see the state in competition with first-time buyers for the limited supply.
And I can see
available.
The first-time buyer coming out and saying, look, I've been working all my life, I've managed to put 25,000 together because we've been living in the box room and now we're getting outbid by the state.
Even though there was a bit of that there already, because this doesn't seem to be an entirely new thing, even though it has been marketed like it is. I suppose the target around refurbishments of vacant properties is fairly high at 20,000. Again, that seems extremely extremely ambitious when you look at the type of work that has to be done with those properties to get them
standard.
But like
the first-time buyers, it may prove extremely popular with people who are just desperate to start getting their first home underway.
And actually, that is a good point. There's a lot of criticism from economists for those schemes, the Help to Buy and the First Home Scheme, because you're just pushing up prices. You're essentially giving people more money to go out there and buy properties that will inflate prices, but they're popular. And therefore, politicians like them because constituents are happy to get that extra help.
So in terms, Joe, of the politics of this, and you were talking about government backbench reaction, even if there are people on the backbenches who might be a bit sceptical themselves about the 300,000 figure critical to the last election, off target for the first 3 years up to 2027, according to all the predictions, but somehow at the end of 5 years, there'd be 300,000. Even if that's not there, what do they need? Would it be a sense that, OK, even if we haven't met that target, that we could go back to the people before the next election and say, we've turned the Titanic
around? Brian Lenehan, we've turned the corner.
Yeah, I think that's the very minimum that people would require, you know, because, you know, if you think about it, over the course of the last 10, 15 years, the housing crisis has spread into every home in the country in many ways. It's not just about the economically disadvantaged. There's lots of people that are economically doing fine. They're both working. They've got families. They're living with their parents. They're unable to buy a house. So it's across every sector of society. And I know from talking to TDs as well that they're hearing it from the middle class homes as much as they're hearing it anywhere else, you know. So, I mean, they do have, what, 4 years left to deliver this plan. And I think really it obviously is the number one priority for the government at the moment. But they're going to have some really tangible results if they're going to go back to people once again and say, trust me one more time.
They're banking on time, I think. It's exactly as you're saying, that if the election isn't going to happen, if they can push it out until late 2029, well, then there is hope that they can turn this around. There has been an uptick in some of the planning permissions. We're not seeing that come through in the commencements, but they're hoping that this can kickstart now all of that.
There's an interesting comment from the Taoiseach when it came up talking about infrastructure this morning, and he talked about the appetite for risk increasing. Which sounds like a nod to ongoing negotiations, which obviously take place between the permanent government and government when it comes to those huge projects. I suppose particularly that drainage scheme system in North Dublin, which if it doesn't happen, and probably will require the emergency legislation, that you can have all the plans you want, but you won't get any planning permission for new properties. So things like that are going to be the measure of it. It does seem like the housing minister, though, is one who isn't afraid to tackle the more difficult parts of this. And in some ways, what sets this plan apart from other ones is perhaps it's kind of low on the sales pitch. There isn't any Delby Trotter stuff here, but at the same
time, there are
no fireworks either. I'm not saying anything.
But Micheál, could the minister be doing a better job of selling his plan? The opposition quite critical of the fact that he won't be around tonight to be selling it on the airwaves.
I think he's going to be on the 6-1 news though. So scoop.
That's enough. And he did the news at one. Yeah. So, I mean, does that really hold water? And he did the launch.
He's fleeing the country,
you know,
with the political charge.
Yeah.
And a more serious question.
There was a biblical, wasn't there a biblical reference too from Labour saying that water into wine is the hope here? Yeah.
That 300,000. But, Joe, you were saying it's the number one political priority, and that's what government always say. But that brings Owen Murphy, former housing minister, to mind, and what we learned from his autobiography, that the reason he felt he couldn't make headway on housing was because the government didn't make it an emergency. It wasn't the priority. Brexit was. And it's just, you look at the government at the moment and you've got the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach. They've a lot going on the world stage. There's the EU presidency coming up. There's an awful lot going on. So how much is housing really the number one priority? Is that a fair question to ask?
Well, you see, there is this thing, isn't there, with housing, that it's becoming like health in the sense that people are so disillusioned, they're not really engaging in the detail of what is being presented to them. But of course, that's a massive danger for government because there's no retrieving that. But equally, it makes the job of opposition difficult when they are trying to price through policy and when they are being critical. I think there is a fear about that with housing, a sense of desolation, really.
Yeah, and I mean, I go back to the presidential election. I mean, there was an awful lot of disquiet and upset expressed by an awful lot of voters in that election for various reasons, of course. But there was a general sense that, you know, the way Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael conducted themselves was less than covered in glory, and that there was an awful lot of dissatisfaction amongst voters and amongst the general public with those two parties as well. And, you know, this, I think all of that, it's all part of a continuum, really, where people have been looking at this housing issue and looking at other challenges to their lives, the cost of living and all the rest of it. And they're just feeling that they're all in sort of treading water, not getting anywhere, not making any progress. And I think the government, I think the two parties do recognise that now.
There is the other point.
Hall. But yet, if you cast back to the general election, Sinn Féin would have felt in the run-up to that that housing was their trump card. This is the one where Eoin Óibrín had written books on it. Well, so has Rory Hearn, he would say at this point. But they would have thought that would have fed in more to the general election. Of course, it was a big topic. But yet, after that election, we were back with a version of the same government. And there were other reasons.
40,000 homes, of course.
Yes, of course, and the opposition will never let that one go.
But Sinn Féin, you're right, couldn't sell its plan of fine, you'll have the mortgage on your home, but the state will own the land underneath your home. Mm. That didn't travel in the numbers they hoped and needed.
Yes, and I wonder for the next general election, will they reheat that element of it? I think they had a real difficulty explaining that part. People in Ireland want to own the entire house and the land underneath it, and they don't want any dilution of that.
There is the fact too, though, isn't there, that this plan, and even though if there's a scepticism whether it can be realised or not, that it may not be ambitious enough, that there is that view that it's 20% short of the supply
demand.
That's
what Eoin Óibrín says.
Yes.
I wonder how the developers of those new apartments down in Dunor there, St. Teresa's Gardens, how they felt about the names been scrawled all over the brand new building that they've just completed there.
And if you buy an apartment or you end up in an apartment there, will you have Simon Harris and Micheál Martin's name
Will their
the
signatures stay on the wall, I wonder? Will they be there preserved forevermore?
An artefact.
Speaking of
Micheál, you could use your contacts to find out that first, could you?
Who wore the helmet? Who wore the hard hat best, did you thought?
I think they all look silly in hard hats, don't they?
But they love it.
I mean, something of the thick of it about it, wasn't there?
Yeah, if I were giving them advice, I'd say don't wear a hard hat. Although
the Taoiseach was asked about that in the Dawn, and he said it is required when you're on a building site to wear a hard hat.
And you mentioned Eoin Murphy's book. He really went for it, and he shirt sleeves rolled up. Yes, that was when there was a weather. They loved the big weather events as well because the shirt sleeves were rolled up and they were really getting down to business. But he says that he wanted to show that he was out there. He was justifying his decision to go all around the country with the hard hat and the high vis, kind of turning the sod.
It's a good metaphor for being in public life in Ireland, anyway, having to wear the hard hat, isn't it?
Well, I don't know about Micheál Martin's hard hat. Was he wearing it the other night at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting?
Well, he went on the offensive, said he would fulfil his mandate as Taoiseach and he did duty to lead the country. And I suppose there was also comments some would read into at the presidential inauguration where he said he looked forward to working with Catherine Connolly during the EU presidency. So I think he is very much saying that he is going to remain as Taoiseach. Some would read into that. Is that a signal? Could you read it? Are there things happening behind the scenes? Some believe there are, some believe there are not. Interesting comments from Joe Flaherty. Joe Flaherty, you say interesting comments, yes, on Midlands Radio during the week, where he spoke about Micheál Martin not leading the party into the next election, but continuing on for the duration as Taoiseach, and then that someone else could come in, and that would be good for them, Taoiseach, slightly easier, less pressurised, good opportunity for change. Joe Flaherty would be seen, I don't know where he stands now in the ranking of things, but traditionally would be seen as someone who would be very loyal to Micheál Martin. Could that be the kind of path that's being laid now at this point? I think it's possible. What you did see last night was some within the party who just didn't like what they were hearing. The report on the review is going to be delayed now until December, but I think things moving on, it does come back to that point that it's all about delivery, and that's where the pressure is, and that's where the pressure is going to be maintained on the Taoiseach as well. But there equally is the closing of the ranks among some senior ministers who want this to be shut down for the moment.
I'm told that the heat was kind of taken out of it last night, that Micheál Martin gave a very strong speech at the beginning of it. He spoke about unity, and apparently he also took a few pops at people, that people were felt that maybe Billy Kelleher was in his sights at one stage. He spoke about youth. You may have noticed that Billy Kelleher gave that speech talking about Fianna Fáil losing the youth vote. Maybe somebody else suggested to me that he took a pop at Malcolm Byrne as well, without naming anybody. So this is conjecture, I suppose, but people are reading into what he said. There was also a discussion about special education, and that, I suppose, kind of diluted things because that's a subject people feel very strongly mm-hmm. about. So that kind of diverted things. I'm told that the heat has kind of been taken out of it for the moment, really. Things have settled down, and with the housing plan today, there was some criticism last night also about officials and about delivery and things being held up, and a lot of people just want to focus on getting stuff done rather than the distraction of some sort of leadership challenge engulfing the party.
So is the leader managing to make time work for him on his side here by stretching out the timelines and diffusing the emotion somewhat?
I don't know, Anya. I'm just following Michal's tweets now, to be honest. That's where I'm getting the information from.
Fianna Fáil adamant to say that it wasn't the leader who said that the review wouldn't be ready till December. Of course, that's a totally independent committee, you know, nothing to do with the leader at all.
And Jim Gavin won't be interviewed for it,
no,
we've learned.
Jim Gavin's back at work, citizen now again.
It all depends who you're talking to, of course, in Fianna Fáil about this. You know, I mean, those that are unhappy with the leadership remain unhappy with the leadership. And if you talk, certainly I was speaking to one of them yesterday, and he said to me that it is still happening, and there is still a crystallisation of resentment and a crystallisation maybe of support for some sort of an action. But
will they pull the trigger?
Well, that's the thing, you see, yeah. And if there is some sort of a crystallisation, you're still not seeing a figurehead to lead that. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Michal's tweets, I think. Yeah, I recommend everybody look at Michal's tweets.
The timeline here is interesting. Okay, so we have the housing plan now. We'll be getting the infrastructure plan by the end of the month, some point in early December. We're hoping we will at last see the Fianna Fáil mm-hmm. review of its disastrous presidential campaign.
Which is becoming less relevant, though, somehow.
Well, we're further out from the pain, aren't we? And we're heading into the joy and celebration of the Christmas spirit. And then, of course, hovering in the background is going to be this emergency legislation that the government seems to be making an even bigger deal of than the housing plan that was launched today. So you can see how there'd be a rally of the troops, and this is not the time. So you're into January by that stage, aren't
you? And Micheál Martin, I think, is away for, somebody told me, the guts of the next 2 weeks, because he's in South Africa for that G20 meeting. So he'll be away. Does that leave time for people to plot? It has done in politics in the past, but in this instance it seems to have bought him time. Things just seem to be a little bit diluted. Mm-hmm. It does depend what this report throws up, but you'd have to say at this point it doesn't look likely that it would throw up something that will cause complete upheaval.
Will even deputy heads roll?
I'd say not at this stage, yeah.
No, I don't think so. But I suppose what you do have is, like, Jim O'Callaghan clearly in the lead here. But, I mean, there are other people still with ambitions there who won't say it publicly, won't even say it privately. That's an interesting thing about this Fianna Fáil manoeuvrings at the moment. Mm-hmm. There are different factions within the party who don't seem to be communicating with each other. There's a lot of it being done in silence, you know, akin to different types of political systems. But that is happening. But I suppose
and they're all being watched at Hawks, even up in St. Yeah. Patrick's Hall the other day. Everyone's watching who's talking to who. And
yeah. Big time.
Yeah, watching the body language.
It's achieved by telepathy.
Yeah.
But the other
WhatsApp groups.
Very hard to forecast how it's going to go.
Other senior people need time. They need time if their ambitions to become party leader are to be realised. And I think they will contribute to closing the ranks for the moment, at least.
And going back to St. Patrick's Hall, the Regal Purple came out the other day, Sandra.
Yes, it was a
didn't
great
ask us about that.
So. Yes.
No, well, I didn't think, frankly, it'd be worth it. Would you look at
I have a view on I have a view.
Well, I'm told it was Louise Kennedy,
designer.
And
she's
did
fabulous.
Give she gave a colleague a very detailed synopsis of the meaning of all the colours and the outfit. But Catherine Connolly looked very well. The day went very well. I think most of the interest and attention was on her speech, of course. And I think she gave a very short, well-crafted speech, but she laid down several markers. I thought it was remarkable how quickly it became political. Into about the third line, she seemed to be taking aim at the government over housing. Everyone has a fundamental right to a home. And then it got a little defensive about the prevailing narrative and how people didn't believe they could do it. She spoke about
left.
One exactly. And she spoke about one of her key themes, something I think we will hear a lot about, which is that this aim to build a new republic. Now, how you do that from Orson Uchtaron, we're not quite clear, but she does see herself as being a figurehead for some sort of movement like that. Also, of course, she's been exhorting everybody to speak Irish. We got that during the speech and in several speeches since then. But I also note, and I think it was worth noting about the speech, there had been predictions that it would be largely in Irish. Less than a third of it was in Irish. So she was mindful of her audience and the amount of people out there across the country who do not have fluent Irish, and she did want to be understood.
Agus Lig Don Ghaelga of Lahu, she wanted the Irish to start flowering. But also that phrase, there's been a bit of a reaction. And it's a phrase we've heard throughout this campaign, Tiargan Tianga, Tiargan Anam, a country without its own language is a country without a soul. And President Connolly talking about that on her first engagement yesterday at that Gael school, you know, Tom Gwega, Fitze Fuitze, Unning. So talk to me, Joe, because some people have been saying, OK, and there's a huge welcome for the Irish, obviously young voters really into it and wanting to learn again. And that was one of the big attractions that Catherine Connolly had going for her. But do you have less of an Irish soul if you don't speak Irish, is the question.
Yeah, well, obviously, that is a very deep question.
I think Joe has some interesting comments he'd like to bring in here.
5 minutes on that. I can speak with some authority because I learned Irish as well. I'm not an Irish speaker by birth, of course, you know.
I'm not.
Just because I'm from Galway, I'm not actually an Irish speaker by birth. Or, sorry, as my mother tongue. But the Tiargan Tianga, Tiargan Anam thing, I know what she's talking about there, which is she's talking about the sense, and it's a sort of it's an abstract value that you put on the Irish language as opposed to a daily communication medium, which is the sense that, you know, a lot of our feelings, a lot of in Irish, it's a very expressive language. There's an awful lot of words to describe, say, for instance, you know, different types of weather. There's an awful lot of words to describe how you would feel.
And that's one of the points President Connolly was making, this, that nature and gives us a connection
so
with nature.
You can, I suppose, communicate an awful lot more in many ways through Irish. I think that's what she's getting at. There's an intrinsic value to it as well, because we have all a collective unconscious that goes right back to when we were all Irish speakers in the country. But, you know, that is not the same thing, and people will view that differently, obviously, if they don't speak Irish, if they can't understand Irish. And if it gets to the point where people start to feel that they're somehow, not up to scratch, or they're lesser citizens because they are not fluent Irish speakers, well, then that obviously isn't the place where you want to get. And I don't think she has said that in any shape or form.
No, and as I say, a huge welcome for the President's, you know, beautiful use of Irish. She speaks Irish particularly beautifully and clearly. But she was also talking about unity, Sandra. And we know that, you know, in the North, and I know the new language commissioners have just been appointed, and maybe that will bring some resolution to what's turned out, the whole question of the Irish language, to be a very vexed question within the Northern Ireland executive and, you know, across the society there. And you could just see how that could all play out more if we are to have more of a conversation on unity by consent.
Yes, and she spoke about Article 3 in her speech. Other people have noted that she referred to Northern Ireland as the North. Some have taken issue with that. Something else to note, of course, was the lack of representation from the DUP. People did feel that was a snub. Yes, it was Remembrance Day, but they could have sent somebody else other than Emma Little Pengelly. The UUP sent Steve Aiken, all the other parties in Northern Ireland sent representatives. So maybe not a great start there. And when somebody doesn't turn up, it does become part of the story, which is something that could be easily avoided. Just on the speaking Irish, I was given a copy of the audio of the speech that she gave in the Oras, which was behind closed doors, to the invited guests at the lunch after her inauguration. And President Connolly was addressing 90 guests, but it was a lot of dignitaries, all the cabinet, the ex officio members of the Council of State, so senior judiciary, the Attorney General, former Taoiseach, those kind of people. But she was also asking them to learn their Irish and brush up on their Irish. So it's not just the children, the school children in the Gael School. She's taking it right up to the top of all across society, and it's clearly going to be a big project for her.
So did she have better Irish than Donald O'Donnell, the Chief Justice? Did she clean it up for him a few times when she was taking her oath?
You're getting into tricky territory there now.
No comment.
The judiciary versus the
presidency. Those were all the
formalities,
but I do know that there was a huge, the United Left, there was absolutely, they were all looking forward to the big party, the shindig, when the cameras weren't there, when they all came back to Dublin Castle and St. Patrick's Hall later that night, and President Connolly was there getting her picture taken with all the great and the good. But Frankie Fian, was he feeling a bit left out, Micheál?
Yeah, he was, he found himself photobombing a picture with Ruth Coppinger, Catherine Connolly and Richard Boyd Barrett, and Ruth Coppinger called him a Fianna Fáil TD, kind of trying to get
that's
in the picture.
That's the worst insult.
Yeah.
Which she said he was an FF TD, wasn't
she
it?
She did, yeah.
Frank Fian TD. Yeah.
It was kind of like, well, who was that? There was that guy who used to get in the Man United team pictures, wasn't there? Carl Power, I think, yeah. Famously, Frank has become the Carl Power of...
Well, Frank pleads, of course, that he was just queuing like everybody else to get his...
I think he was.
Congratulator.
And if President, and Joe, if President Connolly is...
Ruth Coppinger particularly aggrieved too and unhappy with the actual inauguration ceremony, that there was far too much religious people speaking at the beginning of it, she felt.
And she didn't like Paddy Tolbean being there either.
So far up the front and being there, yeah.
And if it was nice, because we were just saying before we started, President Connolly is going to get used to saying Ní Laoin Obair Bhaile Agaibh an Ocht when she goes to visit schools, because that's what she did when she went to visit that Gaelic school yesterday. But she's giving lots of other Obair Bhaile, Joe, isn't she? It seems to the judiciary and official Ireland. Your Obair Bhaile, Cleacht Gí Gaeilge.
Yes, indeed, yeah. I think that the Ní Laoin Obair Bhaile An Ocht will become like the one for everyone in the audience. Now, whenever she'll go to a school, it'll have to be that. No homework tonight.
In fairness, any time I've seen a minister go to a school, they also invoke this power.
And you were there yesterday, as she said, Beatlemania.
Absolutely. I mean, the kids were ecstatic. And it was, I think, a very clever first choice for her team. Very deliberate. Go to the Gaelic school, emphasise Irish. But also, it was just simply a very joyful, wholesome occasion, very nice pictures to demonstrate her priorities on the first day of her official engagements. She also went to a family resource centre. She visited a nursing home in Galway. So she kind of ticked all the boxes. No official engagements today. I think she has appointed an Italian ambassador. But other than that, I think her team are getting to grips with the priorities for the term and then the Council of State, which may not, those seven appointments might not happen until January.
And we leave you with this thought. The desk, did you notice the photograph of the presidential desk compared with President Higgins? Yes.
Is there a fear, though, that she won't get time to practice her ball skills? Now, one of the kids in Dublin Castle had brought in a ball for her to do the keepy uppy. So I think that is a risk, you know, if you don't get the time.
There's plenty of room up there at the Oros.
You can't go, though, without...
I'm told that everywhere she goes now, she's asked to do the keepy uppies.
On the desk, I was told today that there are no bills to sign yet. And that's an indication of what's going on in Leinster House. There hasn't been much legislation passed.
Statements
through the
on Science Week today.
Statements on Science Week for a couple of hours this afternoon.
Wait a second. There might be more democracy on the way. Micheál Martin wants to bring back the town councils. Told Seamus Healy during the week,
yes,
who comes from the town where there was the oldest town council in the country. And Micheál Martin said he's dealing with a system really that has to be brought kicking and screaming back to try this thing, but he wants them established in places where they were in the past and also in new locations with growing populations on a pilot basis. So there'll be more people to make statements.
So all those reasons for getting rid of them back in the day, which were about costs, about needless doubling up on dealing with issues in local authority areas, etc.
Brendan Howland now says that was a terrible decision.
So all that's been reversed now, or talk about reversing.
I think
we should say thanks to anybody who's been listening to this podcast, because they've probably run 5, 6, maybe 10 kilometres at this stage.
Yes, to all the people who listen to us when you're out jogging.
Whatever they've been doing,
and who've been complaining it wasn't long enough. We're happy that you got a little bit longer today, and we'll talk to you again next week. Cheers. Bye.